The title is clunky, but the wine talk is smooth. You're listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Joined now by Michael Pincus. You might know him from MichaelPincusWineReview.com. And if you don't, why not? Go there. It is a great website. Maybe you know the podcast, Two Guys Talking Wine, with Michael and with Andre Preux, who's been on the podcast a couple times. Michael, thank you so much for doing the pod and pouring a really nice 11-year-old single vineyard Ontario Cab Franc.
Hey, it's my pleasure. I'm always looking for people to share great wine with, and this was in its youth a great wine, and mm-hmm. I think it's heading there again.
The fruit is still there. This wine is alive, and this is yet example number 4,510 for people listening that Ontario makes age-worthy, you know, medium-bodied red here. Like, there's a lot of good age-worthy wines everywhere.
And you actually nailed it. I said, here, just taste it, and you said Bordeaux style, New World. 15 years old.
Yeah.
And it is. It's a Trius 2000, I think it's 12. You're looking at the label. So it's
2012. Yeah.
Red Shale Cabernet Franc. And I was a little nervous when I first opened it, but I think it's opening.
How sad is it, and this is something just in the wine world, how excited we get when we get a blind taste correct. Like, I just took a quick sniff and I immediately went there, and I'm not going to lie to you, that's the best thing I'll do all day. And I didn't pick the exact grape. I just said Bordeaux blend, but I did fairly well. And I'm not going to lie to you, that's going to make me more proud than anything else before today or when I go to bed tonight.
You're going to go home and tell your dog, aren't you?
I'll call my girlfriend. Amy, guess what? Are you sitting down? And I'll tell her the story. And if she's in a good mood, she'll feign interest and excitement for me.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what it mostly is. It's like, and I'm sitting here going, damn, he got it.
Yeah. But that is something about the wine world is, even like, I've seen Master Somms, well, maybe not as much Master Somms, but we're still get nervous, still get uncomfortable doing blind, and still get very excited when you get one really right.
I still do as many cheats as I possibly can. Mm-hmm. Somebody's going, all right, I'm gonna pour a wine for you blind. I still watch them like a hawk. Maybe I can get something out of the bottle, something out of the cork.
You're game in the system.
I'm looking at the, you know, I'm looking at the capsule. I'm looking at the bottle itself. Is it a Bordeaux? Is it a Burgundy bottle?
But that goes against all the rules of court.
Of course it does.
You're not supposed to do that.
You gotta use everything that you know to your advantage.
Yeah, cheat.
Cheat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We were talking before about the perils of having your own website, and your website's great. I do recommend everyone go to it. It's really well organized, and you know, the tastings, the notes, the videos. The perils of what you do with just how ignorant you are when it comes to technology. And you're way better than I am. I nearly ended doing podcasts because I couldn't figure out how a second mic, why it wasn't recording on my computer.
Where's the question?
You jerk. There really isn't. Okay, here's the question. You're such a jerk, but you're also right. You're also 100% right.
I'm not denying that I'm a troglodyte when it comes to this stuff.
Are you amazed that you've been able to keep the website and the podcast going since reviewing a 2005 Peninsula Ridge Syrah?
Have I been amazed at keeping the...
Yeah, are you amazed with your limited knowledge? You've been able to keep the website.
My limited knowledge, my limited budget, like everything limited about it, I have... What's that old saying, you know, paper clips and glue, mm-hmm. you know, and gum and whatever thing I can get together to... Anything I can trade to help get the website going, keep it up. And then the biggest thing that somebody says to you is, your website's too old, you've got to get a new website. And you're like, oh my god. And before the podcast, I was like, I've got to learn how to use WordPress. It's been on my to-do list since July. And it's like, I don't know if I want to learn, if do I want to not learn something new, or I do want to learn something new, but I'm afraid it's going to take way too long and something else is going to suffer.
What I really need is another human being with me. And I was fully prepared until my system was working again. And we'll get off that. It's not about me. This is about you. But I was willing to pay someone. I'm like, I will come to you and give you money show me what I'm doing wrong because I'm so ignorant when it comes to technology. But this is kind of a long way of me starting the interview in a different place.
I did actually spend some money. I have bought a course on how to. There's this thing out of Europe. I think it's called Domestika, and they have courses on how to do all kinds of, like, almost everything. And I actually did. I forked over $30 for this course from some guy.
A whole $30.
Some guy. The course is in Spanish, but English subtitles with all kinds. But I mean, and he does, you know, he does translate a lot into English, but some Spanish guy is doing this course, and I still have yet to do anything with it.
It's back in July.
I'm still nervous. I'm like, I don't want to mess things up.
Also, Domestika. It sounds like either like a bad Scotch or softcore pornography.
They have all kinds of courses. Like, if you're looking for a course on how to do anything technical and technological, they've got it. And now I'm getting all kinds of emails that say, get 3 courses for $10. And I'm like, yeah, I'm a little bit nervous about this course now.
Yeah, just give me a human in person. But I went to your website, and I went to your first review that I could find. It was a 2005 Peninsula Ridge Syrah. The first thing I found of interest was in your review, you talk about made by 25-year veteran and well-traveled winemaker Jean-Pierre Collat, who's now at 13th Street.
Yep.
And it's sort of amazing, like, reading some of your old reviews, like, oh, I know that guy. That guy's over there. Now that guy's over here. What do you remember? And what do you remember about those early days of you doing reviews?
You know what I really liked about doing reviews in the early days? I could walk into a winery and I was anonymous. Nobody knew who I was. I could taste anything I wanted. People were honest with me about what they thought of the wines too, which is really fantastic. I remember walking into Chateau de Charme once, and this lady behind the counter ended up being a good friend named Sue. And I would be like, okay, so I want to taste Chardonnay. Not a big fan of Chardonnay. Turns out she's a huge fan of Chardonnay. But she's pouring things for me and she's giving her honest opinion. She's like, I'm really not a big fan of this wine. You might like it, but it's not my favorite. And that's where it becomes more fun to taste wine. Whereas as years went by, Michelle Bosque, God rest her soul, would see me come in, or like, I don't know if like in a restaurant where they have the restaurant reviewer's picture in the back, if this guy comes in, you know, tell the chef. Same thing, right? If this guy comes in, it's Michelle Bosque that you have to see, not, you know, do not serve him at the bar. We're taking him upstairs.
Really?
We're going to give him the show, blah, blah, blah. We're going to make sure he gets a new bottle. We're going to make sure everything's right, and so on and so forth.
So that's one of the biggest differences in the last 18 years. That's interesting.
The nice part of that comes this, it's almost now come full circle, because I've been at it so long. I've been over this over 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
Now has happened is there's a lot of changeover. People are gone from the industry that I knew. They've moved up in companies. They are doing something else, like with cannabis. They're in beer. They've gone out to BC. You know, all those things that people, you know, get into as a springboard from the wine industry, or, you know, back into the wine industry. And now I can walk in and people are looking at me and they're like, who the hell are you?
Right.
And I'm like, I got to get my cards out again. This is who I am, right? So it's really nice, but I also know a lot of people in senior spots too. So
you've been doing this for, as you just mentioned, close to 25 years. What made you want to get into this? Into wine media, wine reviews, just spreading the good word of good wine.
I really like wine. Let's start there. My very first bottle that I remember.
Good. I always ask this question, and most of the time, a lot of guests don't know what it was. Sorry, continue. Yeah, your
and
first one.
And I do remember it, and I'm surprised that you mentioned the Peninsula Ridge being the first review, because how I really started the website, and it may have gotten just lost over time, but my very first wine that I fell in love with was a 2002 Chateau de Charme Cabernet Merlot, and it's that. I don't know if anybody remembers. It's like a blue or a black label. It's hard to describe, because if you got it in the right light, it was blue or it was black. But it was one of those old timey labels. And absolutely, I just fell in love with this. And 2002, great vintage. What I also remember is 8 years later, sitting with Michelle Bosque, Paul Bosque Jr., and I said, this is the first wine that I've ever tried. that I fell in love with, and Paul Boss going, wow, this has really aged well, right? Mm-hmm. He was very impressed. He's like, I don't even think we have any of this wine left.
Really?
So it was just a great, no, it wasn't a 2000, it was a 1998. Mm-hmm. It was in 1998, I remember that. And I was so in love with it, and I had bought like tons of it. Yeah, and he was like, wow, this has aged really well, in his, you know, grovelly old voice. But mm-hmm. So that's what made me fall in love with Ontario wine. What got me into wine, like doing reviews and such, makes me sound like an absolutely terrible human being.
All right.
But I'm willing to tell it here. I don't know why. I run a recording studio, or I did. It's kind of in the faint background of my life. I still do some recording, obviously podcasting, and I do some production for some people and things like that. When I ran the recording studio, no matter how I tried, I could not do a female voice. You can squeeze them all you want, you just can never get them high enough. You know what I mean?
I'm going to say yes, but just to yes and you, but it's been a while since I decided to squeeze them to see how high I could get myself.
So I couldn't do it. So I needed a female voice, and it turns out I had one girl who could do obviously female, French, and English. And never met her before. She was from Montreal. We actually never met in person until years and years later. And we were talking one year after Christmas about there's got to be something you can do that you love and you can make money at and blah, blah, blah. And after Christmas, we were chatting, and she was telling me about all these people that she had seen over Christmas, what she had done, who she had, you know, all her friends who had babies. And she was telling me all the people that she knew. Again, never met her, don't know these people.
Yeah.
So she says, what did you do over Christmas? And as it turns out, I'd gone to a winemaker's birthday party, and he pulled stuff out of his wine cellar just over and over again. And I started describing these wines to her. Finally, after I think the fifth or sixth wine, she said, yeah, that's all well and good. You're not telling me, you know, anything exciting, because the wines are fine, but what about the people? And I said, who cares about the people?
Yeah.
The wines are so fascinating.
Yeah, of course.
And she's like, maybe that's what you should be doing. And that's really what gets me. She actually worked for Bell years ago. Her name was Yannick Falardo. And she should give her a shout out just in case she ever listens. Yeah, she built my first website. She designed my logo. I have the same logo that I've always had. And that's how I got into doing reviews. Is somebody went, you should be doing this.
Drinking alone in movies and stuff, it's always painted very poorly. By the way, often rightfully so. Addiction is a massive issue. Alcoholism, obviously. But wine is one thing you can always do alone when you're studying it and you're trying to figure it out and you're thinking about the winemaker and the technique and what the vintage was. And when you gave that answer, like, who cares about the people? It's about the wine. When I go to wine events or media events, tastings, things like that, my girlfriend, you know, super nice. She's always like, oh, are you going alone? Are you going with anyone? I'm like, oh, no, I'm going alone. She's like, oh, early on, she doesn't do this as much anymore. She's like, are you going to be okay? And I'm like, yeah, I like being alone because I want to try the wine. I want to write my notes and I want to think about it. It is something that you can do it in a very solitary way, but you don't really feel alone. Like it's still very enriching because you feel like you're learning something and the wine's telling you a story.
And there's always, I don't read tech sheets anymore unless I really want to.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody insists on giving you a tech sheet. But mostly the tech sheet is just tasting notes.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I want to make my own tasting notes. I don't need to know yours. I don't need to know what the winemaker thought when he first took it out of barrel. I want to know what the wine is telling me right now. Today, it'll taste different than it will in 6 months. It'll taste different than it is in 3 years. You know, this wine that we're drinking now obviously tasted much different in 2012. And people are always asking me about decanting. We can get into that if you want. I am almost totally against decanting.
Really?
Yes.
You're against decanting.
I am.
Explain, sir.
I opened this bottle when basically you got here.
Yeah.
And right now we are experiencing it as it opens right at this moment.
So it's about the journey for you.
Correct. Okay. So decanting to me is like watching Elementary. Do you remember that show with Sherlock Holmes?
I didn't see it, but obviously I know the show. I think, was it Benedict Cumberbatch?
No, he was in Sherlock Holmes.
Okay.
That was the other guy. It was Johnny something. Somebody will correct us somewhere along the line.
Johnny something, very specific.
Yeah, right, Johnny something. But or let's say a book, okay? You read a book, you read it cover to cover. You don't read it first chapter and then immediately go to the last chapter and read the book. You don't watch a TV show first 5 minutes and then
right.
watch the, you know, find out who, you know, what happened and then the who did it without finding out how they come to that point of how or who did it.
Yeah, you don't watch the first 10 minutes of Godfather 2 and then see, and then afterwards see Fredo getting whacked on the boat while fishing with Al Neri.
Correct. You need all that context.
Spoiler alert.
Look, that's what I think wine is about. I think wine is about the journey of the opening. If you can make that wine last 2 hours, 3 hours, 4 hours, the next day even, and it's something I do occasionally on my Instagram, is that I will open a bottle of wine and I'll write, you know, right now it's doing this. An hour later, this is what has happened. 2 hours later, this has happened. 4 hours later, this is what has happened. Opening it the next, you know, 24 hours later, dead or whatever.
Right.
To see the journey in a bottle of wine without coaxing too much out of it from the get-go, I think is the most exciting part of wine.
Totally get it. All right, no, that makes sense. Before I left here, I opened a Batchelder Pinot, but I just took the cork out. I won't decant it when I get home tonight.
But you've got that. The other funny part is you probably just did. You pour it in a glass?
No,
you didn't do anything.
No.
So there's about, I don't know, a dime-sized piece of air.
It does very little. Yeah. By the way, people need to know this in case you don't. Taking the cork out doesn't really open the wine up that much. If you're gonna do it, everyone, you got to decant it if you want to decant.
Theoretically, you've got to decant. Or if you really wanted to try something different, pour yourself out a glass, leave that on the counter, and then there's at least a wider space of air that's going to get into the bottle.
And I've done that before with a bottle. But okay, no, that makes total sense. Pet peeves. We were talking before about, I was talking about media, tray tastings, and things like this. And we're going to talk about two pet peeves. The other one in a second. But the first one, I hate when someone's poured you the wine, and then the person that just got the glass, they continue talking to the person, going over to the text sheet, and there's 12 people in line behind you. You get your wine poured, you slide to the side. It's pour and slide. I hate these people that decide they need to ask 7 questions about where the oak was sourced from when there's a lineup that looks like you're waiting in line to get on a roller coaster at Canada's Wonderland.
Like the Stones are coming to town, and they just opened the door for the Ticketmaster.
Exactly.
Back in the 70s and 80s.
Yes, yes.
Nowadays,
good timely reference. Yeah. That's one of my big pet peeves at this.
I would agree, and I have learned to slide to the side of the table and never stand in front of it. If there's a side of the table, always try to get there. I have also learned to do the little shuffle and shove my glass onto the table.
Oh, yeah.
Because if a guy sees it, mostly, especially Europeans, if they see a glass on the table and it's empty, they want to fill it.
Yes.
So they'll keep talking to whoever.
God bless them.
But they'll pour you something in there.
Yeah.
New World, not so much. They want to finish their conversation.
The worst.
So that, I see that pet peeve, but I've learned ways around it. Sometimes I'll also just point at the bottle, right? I'll just go that one, right in the middle of the conversation, because I realize I'm never tasting this wine unless I say something.
It's the right technique. I wish I wasn't so meek at that stuff. I just stand and I'm like Oliver Twist. Can I have some more? And then, you know, that's
me. I fully get it. And I guess I've just, it's one of those things where I figure I've wasted so much time in that line. And I just want to, because now that I live in Niagara and I'm not living in Toronto anymore, traffic is so bad. And these things are in the afternoon, right? So it's 1 o'clock to 5 o'clock. The closer you get to 5 o'clock, the longer the ride home is.
Oh, fool for you. It's the same at 3 as it is for 5.
Correct. That is the problem. I learned that yesterday.
Yeah.
I went to the Greek tasting. And yes, I left at 3 o'clock thinking I was going to slip through maybe a little bit, 2.5 hours home.
That's why we're doing this today, because I'm staying at my girlfriend's aunt and uncle place across the street from Henry Pelham. The time it took me to get from there to here was less time than it would take me to get from home to onto the Gardiner, and the Gardiner is 50 feet from where I live.
Yeah.
So
I Toronto is a nightmare to go through.
Yeah.
At the best of times, I really wish they would do tastings maybe in Hamilton.
That'd be nice. Give one Greek wine tip, tasting. Give someone who wants to try Greek wine, has ever tried Greek wine before, what would be one little tip for them?
Try to find some. Like, that's the best advice I can give you. Mm-hmm. When I first started out and I started building a wine cellar of 2,000 bottles, I started by, and Andre loves this story because he's been to my wine cellar. He's seen the real garbage that I have in the early days. I gave myself a dollar limit, and Greek wine happened to be within that dollar limit. And when I first started, and you could do this 25 years ago or more, you could get decent bottles at $10, right? Or then I remember reading a review in Toronto Life of the Long Flat Red. Like my limit was $10. Like that was it. $10.
What year? What year are we talking about?
Oh, we're probably looking at the late 90s.
Okay.
Now we're looking at $10 a bottle. And I remember reading in Toronto Life, David Laurison reviewed this Long Flat Red from Australia, and it was $10.05. And I know, it doesn't sound like a lot, right? But then what you've got to do is you've got to also think to yourself, the moment I break the $10 mark,
right,
even if it's by 5 cents,
now
I'm over $10.
Now you're over $10.
Right? I can no longer say this wine cellar is built on $10.
Yeah. Suddenly your cellar is filled with Lafitte.
As how I wish.
Yeah.
I did break the bank. I got a few bottles of that. And then I made $12 my limit. And then I made $15 my limit because I found a bottle, it was over 12. Mm-hmm. And then $20. So a lot of my cellar was based on, under $20 bottles. And on under $20, I learned about aging wine because I bought a case of Gatto Negro. Mm-hmm. I don't even know if it's still in the LCBO.
Oh, it is. It is.
I bought a case of that.
You were the one.
And I learned two things with that Gatto Negro. I learned one about the ageability of wine because I opened one every 6 months. Two, plastic cork is the worst thing invented in the history of man.
Hell yeah.
And three, the LCBO will take things back because took 6 bottles of that back. And as long as it's been in the LCBO and they can find it, they will take it back. And those 3 things that I learned on that very interesting experiment. But I learned ageability of wine, plastic corks, and the LCBO will take back wine that is gone bad.
Well, you actually never really said much about Greek wine, so I'll just say
so
Xenomarva. Go find Xenomarva. It's like a baby Barolo.
What I'm saying is we don't see a lot of Greek wine.
We don't.
LCBO.
No.
You have to go to the destination store to find any Greek wine. So what you should do is if you find any and you're like red or white, I prefer their reds to their whites. Some of their whites are pretty crisp, but I'm not that big a fan of them. I find the climate too hot for whites. Same thing in Tuscany. I really don't like the whites from Tuscany. San Gimignano, they make some decent stuff there.
Yeah, if you're drinking Italian whites, you're going Friuli.
Yeah, you've got to go much further north.
Yeah.
But if you can find any Greek wine, buy it. Don't break the bank. Like, there's some really great Greek wines out there for $15, $18 I was trying. And again, I'm not gonna even try to pronounce what they were called.
Oh, no, it's going to murder you.
But I mean, just buy a bottle. Buy two. Alpha Estates is a great producer, but I find them, they're expensive, but they're really good.
You mentioned your wine collection back in the day was quote-unquote trash. What is do you remember like the trashiest bottle that you used to have in your cellar? And then the second part question, what's the bottle you currently have in your cellar that you're most excited to open?
So the trashiest bottle, thank God I never did get into Baby Duck. I never even bought a bottle of it. But the trashiest bottle, you know what? I never really had, oh, yes. Okay. All right. I was going to say I've never really bought a trashy bottle. I always did a lot of research in my day about bottles that I bought. But there's two that really come to mind. One of them was this wine from Kentucky, which was absolutely terrible, and probably mostly because I totally forgot about it. And
really, that's not because usually Kentucky wines are known for their ageability.
Yes. I totally forgot about it. During one of our podcasts where we did Stump the Chump, I found it and pulled it out. And
you're such an asshole.
And nobody could figure out
you're one. Such an asshole.
What it was. It was so goddamn terrible. And I'm like, this is from Kentucky. And everybody's like, no, yeah, don't ever pull that out again. So for years, it was the worst wine. But I also remember one year my neighbor had a Mexican dinner and everybody had to bring something. And I looked in my cellar because I use Cellar Tracker and I went, I have 6 bottles of Mexican wine. And they were like, you have what? And I'm like, that's what we're bringing.
Yep.
So I had L.A. Cheto, like three bottles of that. Like they had a Zinfandel, they had a Petit Sirah, they had a Cab.
Sounds subtle.
And I had other, like another three that, I don't know, again, from back in my heyday, mm-hmm. I bet you these were all under $10 bottles of wine. And lo and behold, I went 50-50 on that. Three of them were good.
Oh, good.
And three of them were just undrinkable.
I've had Mexican wine only once. A friend bought a bottle. It was like $50, $60. And this was about 7 years ago. And it was horrible. Okay, then how about on the other end? And right now, I should tell that Michael is now going to be opening up an old funky Pinot. So we're going to try that and appreciate. And by the way, once again, that Cab Franc was really good. That was a really nice wine. Like just really enjoyable. And just all the notes you would expect from like an older Bordeaux-ish styled New World wine that's well made. It was all that. That was a great wine.
I was very happy with it.
Yeah, you should be.
So, I really absolutely love the red shale Cab Francs. I've always loved it. And it's been always hard to hold on to them. I find it a lot easier to hold on to wine the more you have.
That's true. It's a numbers game.
Correct.
Also, you got to hide it somewhere.
Correct.
That's one of my big things. My stepdad, I keep a lot of wine in his cellar, and then I forget about it. And it's very, very, very important. Cheers, by the way.
Cheers.
Thank you.
And again, we're gonna. So this. Let's see if you can. Let's see if you can pick the year, because I think I told you what it is.
Yeah, you told me it was Pinot. I feel. Well, who knows? I mean, I think I would have called it Pinot, but it's easy to say. I think I would have called it Pinot when I know that it's Pinot.
So. Well, the bottle. And I don't know why I picked these wines. I was just walking around and I started thinking, what am I going to pour for Matt? For God's sakes, I got to pour something for the guy that's at least going to be of interest. So I hit the red shale. And this one, I'm probably more interested than you. I don't even know if you remember this winery. So that's...
I'm going to say not like 20. I'm going to say it's definitely got a little more age on it. Also, it doesn't feel like a crazy hot vintage, but just the perfume, the floral notes are all over the place on this wine. I think it's got some years on it. I'm going to go 2000. I'll go 2018.
So I will say my notes on this one, it's got a little VA, not just a little, it's got a ton of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of hope sometimes it blows off. This is the early days of screw cap here in Ontario. This is, do you remember a winery, Coyote's Run?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So this is one of their single vineyard Pinots. I don't know.
Whatever happened to Coyote's Run?
Well, Coyote's Run was sold.
10? Wow.
Yeah. So that's the Black Paw.
Good for them. It still has like...
I was way off on that one. It's still got something to
Let's focus on me getting the Cab Franc right and not me screwing up the vintage that badly.
But yeah, they got sold to one of the large cannabis growers. And they were told they couldn't hurt the vineyard, if I remember. So Niagara College took over the vineyard, but then the vineyard fell into disrepair. And I don't think it was Niagara College's fault. But anyway, now if you go by where Coyote's Run used to be, the buildings are still there, but the vineyards are long gone.
That's lovely.
A pile of sticks.
But. That's a lovely wine. Mm. The other one was, is there a bottle that you side-eye every now and then and go, oh, guess what? You're going to be on New Year's or on an anniversary or something.
I have a bunch of those, and I purposely don't know where they are.
Smart.
They are here, though. I do have some, I think it's 18 TIG, mm-hmm. That are kicking around.
Yep.
I think I have two of those. I know there's some really nice California cabs that, again, are kicking around but are lost. And I do have a bottle of... Oh, I have a bottle of the Black Chicken, which is a Zinfandel.
Of course, Robert Bialy.
I love Zinfandel because I love barbecue.
Yeah.
And every time you tell people who are not in the wine business, you know, that you love Zinfandel, they laugh their ass off.
I know.
Because you're thinking it's the pink stuff. And you're like, and you have to go, it's not the pink stuff.
Yeah.
It's not the pink stuff. Leave it alone. And I do know that there's some other little tree. Oh, I love Two Hands out of Australia. And I know you said you're not a big Australian wine fan.
I'm not an Aussie red guy. The most douchebag line, here it is from me. Yeah, unless it's Tasmanian Pinot, I don't really like Australian red. I want to punch myself every time I say that sentence. But it's also true. I've tried Grange. I've tried the yummy stuff. I don't find it yummy.
Oh, see, I like Two Hands. They consistently deliver great wine. I know it's got the high alcohol. I know it's got the big fruit. But there's just something about it that I really like.
And the other one that I usually like were Thorne Clark until they got sold. If I'm not mistaken, Thorne Clark is now sold. It was really funny. It was during it was during one of the agents' tastings in Toronto at one of the, like it was a bar or something. I can't remember where they had it. And I walked up to the table and Thorne Clark was at the table, mm-hmm. like the wine. And I'm like, I'm just gushing over the wine. I'm just saying how much I love this, these wines, and they're so hard to find. I go to the States to get them, blah, blah, blah. And who's sitting in front of me but Mr. Clark himself.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah. And he's like, and I'm like, I really love these wines. He goes, yeah, my name is, what I can't, David Clark or whatever his name was, like the Dave Clark Five. But
second timely musty reference from you.
But, Dave Clark Five. But I mean, I was just gushing over his wines and I'm like, and he's blah, blah, blah. And he says, I'm Dave Clark. And I'm like, okay, let's pretend I didn't say all that because I'm supposed to be like a
non-objective.
Like
yeah.
Objective. Non-biased wine writer, but God, I love your wines.
Oh, so. That's nice. No, that is cool.
Yeah.
By the way, I just realized we've been talking now for like a little over 30 minutes, and this has been a totally just a fuck around interview. I actually have like real questions to ask you, like serious, oh. important ones as
oh, okay.
well.
All right.
And we'll get to those in a second. But one more.
God forbid we should ask something serious.
What is more enraging for you? I'm going to give you two options. Are you ready?
Yep.
You're at a restaurant and you're served the wrong stemware for the varietal. Or the second one, the red wine is served to you and it's way too warm.
Jeez, it's kind of both.
You got to pick one.
So can I can, okay, stemware. Mm-hmm. Probably more enraging. Because, and whether the person likes it or not, I can always ask for an ice bucket and get that bottle chilled. And I've done it. And yes. I've done it in Italy, in places where they're like, oh, okay. Like when I was most recently there, was served a Castello di Nieve mm-hmm. Barbera.
Yep.
Got it to the table. I'm like, it's a little warm.
Barbera should be chilled anyway.
Correct. And I'm like, grab me an ice bucket, throw it in there. I'll drink it. The glassware was okay, but I remember saying, I wish this was more of a Bordeaux glass than what they were giving me. And I think it's a crime if you have a good wine list, and they had a good wine list, that you have crummy glassware. I think that's the crime. If you are somewhere where you're expecting good wine and they have good wines on that list, then you should have stemware to at least have a universal glass. Like Azzolto has a universal glass, Riedel has a universal glass. Buy a bunch of those. You don't have to get, you know, Bordeaux glasses and Burgundy glasses and white wine glasses. Although I would recommend to anybody that's the two things you should have in your life is a good Bordeaux glass, is a good white wine glass. If you drink a lot of Pinot and Chard, then yes, definitely get a Burgundy glass. But and if you can't afford that, find a universal glass.
Now we'll go to the real questions.
Oh, okay. I thought that was a real question.
It was.
That was a tough one, actually.
Yeah, I know. You're really delayed. Yeah. State of wine media now.
Ooh.
Versus when you started. And again, when I went to your website, the first review I could find was the Peninsula Ridge from 2005, made by J.P. Collat. Again, shout out to 13th Street. Excellent sparkling program. How different is it now versus when you started?
Well, there's a lot of fractured media. When I started, I it's really funny because I come in somewhere between the golden age and where everything goes to shit.
So everything's to shit right now?
Correct. Okay. I really do believe there's a lot of problems in the look, when I came in, I was thrilled when the LCBO said, you know what, you're known enough to come in and taste all the wines from, you know, everything that Vintages mm-hmm. releases. And I was thrilled to do that, did that for a number of years. Now they don't do it. You know, they don't care whether they get I think I read something by David Lorison very recently. That said, because our monopoly is run by the government, there should be checks and balances in what they're bringing in. And now there's no checks and balances. They bring in, do whatever the hell they want to do.
It's nice when you're a monopoly.
And, you know, they don't invite the media in to taste everything they're bringing in through Vintages anymore. So we don't have that. And I don't want to shit on influencers because, look, there's a place for that. But if you're an influencer, you know, You've got to tell people that's what you're doing. You're taking money for doing these things.
You have to be transparent.
Correct. If you have a video series that you're running and taking X number of dollars and running it in a newspaper as well as your own video series, and that's how it gets into the newspaper. If you are reviewing a wine that you're taking money from in a major publication that appears four times in 1 year, look, I write a column for a number of publications, and I'm always looking at back issues to make sure that I don't overexpose a wine.
Right.
Like if I like Malivore as Gamay, it's not going to appear for a long time in a column again, in that column. It may appear in a different column because if I like it that much, or I do a rosé report every year. Mm-hmm. I try to focus on different rosés every year in my columns. In the report, it's just how it all shakes out. If Malivore or Ravine appear in the top every year, it just means they're making great rosé. But I struggle with people who are taking money and not disclosing that they're taking that money. And the other thing is that the 100-point scale has been totally bastardized.
It's not a 100-point scale. It's a 90 to 96 scale.
Correct. Well, no, well, depends where you
Sorry,
are.
Sorry, 88 to 90.
I don't even think 88 exists anymore. Yeah. and in fact, as you walked in, I was working on an article that's going to come out in 2 days. So by now, when
you're listening to this, that article's
come
out.
It's already come out.
Yeah.
I have decided in my infinite wisdom that I am tired of the 90 to 99 point scale, because everybody's always looking for that, and what they're really looking for is the hundreds. So I've decided to just break the bank. I'm starting a scale at 100 points and going to 110, because I think wineries, people are saying you should always give 110%.
Yes.
Well, god damn it, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to expect 110%.
You're going to be the highest paid wine writer, because every winery is going to love you. Their shit wine is getting 100 points from you.
So that's where I'm at the moment. I'm just angry enough to do it. And yeah, I'm working on that. It's called giving 110%.
Oh, that's great. That's so good. That is so good.
And, so you can see my old score, and then there'll be a new score underneath it, which is the new 100 point scale.
For me, I love the influencers, the younger people doing it on TikTok and whatever, because if that brings in a new audience to wine and exposes them, it's great. I've always said that Yellowtail is bad wine, but how many people drank Yellowtail and then eventually, study became Psalms and stuff or got into wine? But as you say, the problem is you've got to still have that certain level of journalistic integrity. And I understand you're not boots on the ground in Gaza. It's Pinot Noir. I get it.
Yes.
But you still need to have a level of, you can do it in a youthful, different way. And if you want to get paid for it, great. Everyone has rent. But as long, you need to have a certain level of journalistic integrity.
Yeah, I do believe that is true. You have, if it's a sponsored ad, you've got to say it's a sponsored thing.
Yeah.
Don't tell everybody that they've got to go drink Magnata if Magnata's paid you, because...
How much would Magnata have to pay you for you to say everyone drink Magnata?
You know what? Over the years, I
and by the way, it's an unfair question. I haven't had Magnata in years. I don't know what they're doing recently.
So, full disclosure, they are very nice during my rosé report.
Mm-hmm.
They do send probably 6 or 7 rosés in.
Yep.
This year, I thought 2 of their rosés were really good. Like, really, really good.
Nice.
Like, much better than they have been in the past. I'm not afraid to say that other than the past, it's been garbage water. But this time, somebody's actually paying attention to making some good rosé. And I've never been afraid to call, wineries out. I, years ago, called out Artera, which was then Vincor, for remember when we had the Olympics and then that Olympic wine came out? Now it's by Pilateri, which is all VQA because they can't do anything else. But I don't know if you were around when Vincor decided that they were going to make Olympic wine. I think it was when we were in Calgary in 80, no.
Yeah, I mean, I was alive. Thank you for thinking I'm that young. But I certainly wasn't drinking wine when Elizabeth Manley won the silver medal in Calgary.
So, but I remember calling them out and I said, you know what? The wines that you got here are cellared in Canada, which was that the Canadian International Blend, and you're saying this is Canadian wine in Canada. Like, God forbid, like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
And I remember going out for breakfast with a guy named Bruce Walker. My God, the name just popped into my head.
Good for you.
And he was the media guy for Vincor at the time. And I had just written an article about how Vincor and Peller should give up their stores so that small wineries can also see the market. And he went, let me take you out for breakfast. And we did. We went out for breakfast.
By the way, he's kind of cheap. He could have taken him for dinner.
Could have taken me out for dinner, but yeah. He takes me out for breakfast. And I, yeah. You know, I get the eggs and the bacon, you know, yeah. $6.99 or whatever yeah. it was at the time. I'm sure I cost him a pretty penny.
Keep that coffee running.
And I know this is unlimited coffee, but yeah. Can you charge him a little extra for every cup I have? So he takes me out and he says, that's never going to happen. That's basically what he says to me. And I go, that's fine. Bruce, in 2 weeks, I'm going to write it. I have an article already on the table that I'm going to call you guys out for your stupid Olympic wines. And he's like, no, you're not. And I said, I swear to God, I'm going to do that. And we left. And I said, I'm giving you fair warning to get in front of it. Never did. The article came out. And still to this day, I don't think Bruce is that smart, to tell you the honest truth. Doesn't realize I have a recording studio in my house. I have a recording of him threatening me that I should take that article down.
Really?
Find something else to write about.
Jesus.
Yeah. So I remember at the time I was part of the Wine Writers Circle of Canada, and Dean Tudor goes, do you want to do something about this? And I'm like, what are they going to do? Are they going to come to my house and hose me down with yeah. wine? Like,
they're going to force me to drink their wine? Like, yeah, what are they going to do?
Again, back to what you said. This is not a Fredo thing. They're not going to take me out in a boat and dump me and shoot me in the head. And I'm not smart. I'm not stupid enough to get in the boat with Vincor at the time. So, you know.
What does a wine, and that, by the way, that's a crazy story. What does a wine have to do to hit 5 stars for you? You're, and again, people, go to the website, michaelpinkuswinereview.com. What does a wine have to do to hit 5 stars?
First of all, I'd like to point out that this Coyote's Run, the VA is blown off, and it's actually really, really lovely.
By the way, both of these, shout out to both these wines. You know, got age on there. They're just very enjoyable depth everywhere. Like, these are good wines.
So, yeah, one's you said 11 years, and the other one's 13 years. Yeah. So I'm pretty impressed. What is it got to be a five? It's got to, wow. You know, I hate to give another shout out to Andre, because I'm sure he doesn't do a lot of shout outs to me on his
when we stop recording, he shit talks you the whole time.
Yeah, I'm like, sure he does.
I'm like, Andre, you guys are partners. This is what you're saying right now is insensitive and rude.
Yeah,
so.
He says that on microphone, I'm sure too. Yeah. But he uses this thing when I guess we're in private or whatever. He says, makes my balls tingle.
Yep.
And that's a 5-star wine to me. It's something that talks to you. I learned years ago that wine tastes better in the place that you are. Like, if you're in Italy, wine's going to taste better in Italy.
Yeah.
If you're in the presence of the winemaker,
it's going to taste better.
It's going to taste better because he's going to tell you, he's going to run a ring of stories around you that you're going to be like, oh, yeah, this wine's great. And then you get it home and you're like, why did I buy this crap?
It's the honeymoon wine phenomenon. You're on your honeymoon. You try the wine. You're staring out at the Mediterranean. It's fantastic.
You're getting a blowjob.
Which actually, no, I keep those two things separate. And then
it's not happening because you're married, because yeah, that's the honeymoon. So that's,
we can get a relationship advice later. You buy a case and you have it on a Wednesday and it's raining.
Terrible.
And it's not terrible. It's fine. Yeah. And you're like, oh, this was the best wine I ever had. And now it's fine.
Wine is 80% where you are, what you're doing, and 20% what's in the bottle.
Yeah.
If people don't know that, then you're kidding yourself. You really are. A great Bordeaux is going to taste great with a promotion. It's going to taste great when you're hanging out with friends. Toro Bravo is going to taste great sitting around the fire with you know, friends and family and great food. And it's going to be a great bottle of wine. It's going to be a 96, 98 point wine.
And only $10. It's going to fly off the shelf.
Fly off the shelf. But that bottle of Bordeaux, if you get fired from a job, you get broken up with a girlfriend, you know, you break your leg, is going to taste pretty crappy, because mm-hmm. it's all about the surroundings. So a 5-star wine to me, I have not given out too many of those. It's hard to give them out. I have given out probably, you've probably done the research, 25, 30 in my mm-hmm. in my day.
And I mean, how many wine reviews have you done?
Oh, hundreds.
Approximately.
Hundreds, thousands,
yeah,
thousands.
Yeah.
tens of thousands. Mm-hmm. Five is the goal, obviously the gold standard. It's not 100 points. I remember being at this Best of Riesling competition in Germany.
Wait, hold on, stop for 1 second. Let's see, we are 48 minutes in. Took longer than normal for the first Riesling reference by a guest. 48 minutes, folks. Longer than I usually expect. Sorry, continue.
Well, I also think Riesling is on a really downswing, so I'm not on the Riesling bandwagon like I used to be.
I'll get out of here.
It's true. I really do believe that wine professionals, people in the wine business, we're all gaga over Riesling.
Yeah, we are.
The rest of the world, not so much.
Not so. I know.
So
wait a minute. By the way, I love every couple of years. There's the article. Is this the year where everyone drinks Riesling? Spoiler alert.
No. So I was at the Best of Riesling competition in Germany, and there was a girl at my table who gave. You know, we're scoring on the 100-point scale. She gave 5 Rieslings 100 points that day. And I'm thinking to myself, girl, I don't know what's going on, because I don't know if I've tasted 100 point wine ever. You've tasted 5 today.
You lucky person.
I just don't know what to say about that.
Yeah.
But yeah, 5 stars is, it's just got to be something that, one, I don't expect. 2, blows my head off, as in, I remember one of them being from Ice Cellars. It was a Cab Sauv. I believe it was like a 2015 or 2016. You do not expect Cabernet Sauvignon from Ontario to be great. And when they are great, you go, yeah, because it was a great vintage. And there's always, you know, caveats as to why it was great. This wine was just supremely great. Like, it was, you'll have to figure out, because I've subsequently bought bottles from Ice Cellars of Cabernet Sauvignon, but I've got to figure out what that year is, and I've got to find it, I got to open it, and I got to taste it and see if I was right. And that's, I think, why I'm scared to open that bottle, because if I find out I was wrong, I'm gonna sit there with egg on my face going, well, maybe you should have given that a 4.
I'm jumping in only because I had an experience with Ice Cellars last year. I love their Cabernet. And I think I bought one of them that was close to, if not $100. And it's a funny thing, spending $100 on a bottle of wine from France or Italy, but from Canada, it's like, oh, $100 bottle from Canada. And I didn't hesitate. It was awesome. And now I'm like, I hope I was right, because it's funny you mentioned Ice Cellars. That was the best Ontario Cabernet I tried, except for one Lely Cabernet before the dark times hit.
So, yes. So, Lely has also gotten a few of the five stars.
Shout out Derek Barnett!
Because Barnett made some great wines. He made some great Cabernet Franc. And I used to go in there when he used to do the preview, when they used to have their en primeur or whatever they called it, and you would go in and you would taste the wine out of barrel. And I do not rate wine coming out of barrel. I have just learned over the years that too much can happen between when it comes out of that barrel and you taste it.
But that's marketing. A lot of that is the barrel thing. That's marketing. That's not wine tasting.
So once it's bottled, once people say, okay, that's the bottle, that's the finished product, then I'll give it a review. I'll give it a score. I will not score tank samples. I know people who still do, and, you know, more power to them. You know, you can walk out of there with egg on your face too many times.
Yeah.
So I don't. But I remember buying stuff at the en primeur and then going, okay, when I get the bottle, when it's finally bottled, I will taste it, and then I will score it. And sometimes I was right, and sometimes I was wrong. But, you know, for what Derek was doing, 9 times out of 10, I was right. And those wines turned out to be really, really good. So, yeah, always a shout-out to Derek. He makes great wine when given a free hand to make those wines.
Try some stuff. I think they're doing. He's doing some work also with Carlo Estates. And, yeah, I remember doing my WSET diploma. We went to Lely, and I remember I was poured some Cabernet Sauvignon in my head. I'm like, oh, boy, here comes a green bell pepper, you know, punch of shit in my mouth. And then I remember trying to go, oh, my God, why is this so good?
Yeah. His Cab Francs were great. Yeah. I always, you know, in the early 2000s, Ontario, especially when it came to Cab Franc, we were trying to emulate the Loire. You know, we had that, you know, the green bell pepper was always there. And I've come to realize that I don't want to drink salad. I'm okay eating it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, exactly.
In moderation.
I would rather have meat or something like that. But, you throw me a Caesar salad or something like that, which I think
Caesar salad doesn't count as salad. You and I both know. I'll have the Hawaiian salad with extra marshmallow. Get out of here.
Exactly. Yeah. Throw something on there that's good for me.
Yeah.
But yes, I'm okay with salad, you know, on a plate, eating it with a fork.
Not on a glass.
I don't want it in the glass.
Hell yeah.
And that's I think, thankfully, for the most part, we have gotten away from that from Cab Franc. Cab Sauv, we have a problem with.
We'll talk a little bit more about the state of Ontario wine in a second. But one thing I love with the videos, and by the way, what's your Twitter account again?
It's The Grape Guy.
The Grape Guy. So easy. The Grape Guy.
Yeah.
Easy to do. Follow on Twitter.
And Instagram.
Yeah.
And Instagram. And Michael Pincus on Facebook. I just never got the...
Yeah, Facebook.
Never got the handle.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Threads. And... it's too much. It's too much social media. I'm a 48-year-old man, okay?
I'm 53. Do you think I like getting up every morning and going, I got to spend... You know, it's like the guy who used to get up from the commercial goes, I got to do the donuts. I'm like, I'm now...
Third musty reference. No one is going to get... Was it Dunkin' Donuts?
Dunkin' Donuts. I got to do the donuts.
Jesus, that is such a good reference.
I wake up every morning going, I got to do the social media. Yep. Right? I got to get that done.
Well, shout out to the social media. One thing I always love is the reviews are always good, very handy, just the passion and the energy. And what's good about them is just you translate a lot of information in an easy way, in a quick way. I don't want to talk about that. I love your blooper videos because I'm not going to say you're on the same level as Samuel L. Jackson about use of the word fuck, or the same thing as Susie Essman from Curb Your Enthusiasm, but your guttural fuck is such a great one in the videos. I highly recommend your blooper videos. I love what I also love about those videos is people get intimidated by wine videos. Oh, it's going to be pompous and it's going to be all highfalutin. And then they see you going, fuck. And hopefully they realize it's different.
So those came about because it was funny. And I was told not to do it. And then I was like, no, I'm going to do it. I don't know why. I figure, you know what? I've done 500 videos. By now, people have got to know I've screwed up a number of times.
Oh, yeah.
And those are my most watched videos. So, sadly, but funny enough, they are the most watched videos that I make, and they're not, they're never pre-planned. Some of them I'm in a vineyard. I wave at a guy who's got by in a tractor, and he's screwed up a good. You know, there have been times that I do a great take, and then I realize microphone's not on. Like, if that's not a fuck me moment, you're never going to get one, right? You know, and sometimes I'm sitting there, you know, waxing poetic about a Chardonnay, and I have Andre going, you like Chardonnay. Fuck you, Andre. So
he's right on that one. Chardonnay's goddamn the best.
You know what? I've tasted so much bad Chardonnay in my life that it's so hard.
No such thing as bad Chardonnay.
Yes, shame there is.
I know.
Have you tasted Kistler lately?
Oh no.
Yes.
Oh, no.
Yes.
All right. Well, let's talk about your reviews. You did a recent one on Cassaba. Great Syrah. I need to ask you a question, Michael. This is a Lionel Richie wine. I can drink it all night long.
Correct.
Did you feel good about yourself after you said that line?
Absolutely. And I'll use it all the time. I started to go with the Kinks as well, all the day and all of the night.
All right. By the way, we're basically at an hour. I got to end this thing soon. you know what? Last question for you. Hopefully I can get this all in within an hour. How different, and you don't have to give a short answer, how different in terms of quality is the Ontario wine scene in 2023 versus right when you were starting your website?
Oh, wow. So obviously we've raised the quality bar. I think I mentioned that in the early 2000s, you know, we were comparing ourselves to Loire because Loire is the only other place that really focuses on Cabernet Franc, you know, as a single varietal. We have learned that, we got to ripen this fruit. We can't just, you know, pick it because, you know, everybody picked it in September. No, let it hang till October if that's what it takes to get it ripe. I think Riesling is one of those grapes for Ontario that we should really start trimming back on. I think there's an overabundance of Riesling in the area. Like, start looking at finding those great vineyards that make great Riesling and then replant. Figure out what else we can do. Our quality is definitely improving, but we are stuck in trying to, you know, look at our past instead of the future. We got stuck on the ice wine train for too long as well. We never said, when Asia said we want all the ice wine you could give us, we never said to them, hey, we make great Cab Franc, we make great Pinot Noir, we make great Chardonnay, try some of that as well. You know, if you want to buy three skids of ice wine, you've got to buy a skid of Cab Franc. We should have been pushing that as a way to help the industry. Our quality is definitely up. We make world-class Chardonnay. We make world-class Pinot. We make world-class Cabernet Franc. We're making world-class Gamay. So I'm happy to see where we're going. I'm seeing more and more people making Gamay, trying to make Gamay, because I think it's a great variety. We do very well. I don't know if I've answered your question, but no. I think our quality is definitely up. You know, we, just like everywhere else in the world, we have our problems too. We have a ton of problems. I'm not going to get into them now. It's you know, maybe we'll get into it.
We'll save it for part two.
We'll invite you to our podcast. We'll talk about the problems with all kinds of things.
And where would that what's the name of that podcast again?
That's Two Guys Talking Wine. We are the second longest running wine podcast in Canada.
Nice. Michael, really appreciate it. This was so much fun. I have so many other technical questions, but then we just start fucking around. But I love what you do. I love what you do with Andre. I love what you do on your own. As someone over the years who now realized, wait a minute, my cellar is filled with so much Ontario wine, and it's really good. It's fantastic. And I just love just the work and the energy that you put in to promote an incredibly well-made product. So thanks so much for doing the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Matt. And I look forward to part two.
Michael Pincus, winereview.com. Thanks everyone for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Remember, you can find me on Spotify, Apple, and wherever quality podcasts are sold.
Thanks for listening to the Matt Talks Wine and Stuff with Interesting People podcast. Happy hunting.